Gannett has a disability called Mowat-Wilson syndrome, which essentially means that his right and left brain have trouble communicating, and thus he can't really integrate what he sees and hears. He drools, he has trouble eating, he can't speak, and it's sometimes hard for him to see. But one thing he definitely does do is enjoy sound, enjoy life and people, and express love. When filmmaker Robert Arnold first met Gannett, it was through his friends from the Art Institute here in San Francisco, where he had studied. Robert's friends, who were painters and musicians and sculptors, were also caregivers, and some were taking care of Gannett. You would see them in the neighborhood, a young, hipster-looking type, walking slowly with a disabled person. It was unusual to see a disabled person on the street. Here in America, and possibly in most of the Western world, disabilities are not necessarily public, and thus our comfort level with disabilities is shallow. Robert Arnold did not set out to make a film about a disabled person. He wanted to explore the inner world of someone who could not communicate externally the way we can. And he discovered someone so full of life and emotion. The Key of G is a documentary that tracks the mundane things, Gannett eating, showering, dressing, but it reveals the extraordinary, and it shows how Gannett moves from his mother's house into a home with a group of artists who make him part of their community. My name is Sonny Katenjian, and today on Sight Unseen, the voice of Robert Arnold, director of The Key of G. We spoke in his editing studio here in San Francisco. He describes the first few moments of meeting Gannett.
When I finally met Gannett, I was fascinated but also like didn't know how to deal with him because he doesn't make eye contact, he doesn't talk, and I didn't know how to interact with him. That kind of interested me and made me want to try to figure out what was going on with him. And then the other big element of that was that the first time I saw them use the communication book with Gannett, suddenly I realized that this guy has this whole interior life that is really hard for him to communicate to the outside world, but it's there. And like when you first see him, you don't think there's that much going on in his head. And then you see him use the book and you're like, wow, like it struck me, like, what is his world like? What is it like to be him? Which is a question that probably will never have the answer to, really. But I was interested in that, and the question that I started with of what is it like to be Gannett? Even what is it like, what is a day in his life like, you know? That's how I started.
And that definitely is what it feels like, a day in his life. Of course, his life extends, it extends beyond that, but you see him go through these very basic, seemingly mundane things that we just don't really think about. Eating cereal or brushing his teeth. Now, one thing that was particularly attractive to me was the fact that we don't really have much access to people with disabilities. They're kind of not necessarily ostracized, but they're hidden, at least in America. Do you agree with that? Is that so? And was that another part that kind of intrigued you, what it was to be disabled, or what it, this fine line between, you know, us and them, so to speak?
I don't think I really thought consciously about disability issues when I was starting. I was interested specifically in Gannett and him as a unique individual, and the relationships between the caregivers and him. Having made the film, I've become more interested in that and also realized that perhaps unconsciously my decision to make this movie had something to do with my mom, who had MS, and she was disabled for many years. But in terms of disability and visibility, it changes over the years. It's interesting to like look at a film from the 60s about disability and how it was totally normal that, you know, the idea that like, oh, these people need to be together and they need to be separated from society. And, the idea of integration is newer, community integration. But Gannett is such an amazing example of that. And it's partially just because of his mother, who is just an amazing woman, and she's also an artist. And like when doctors or anyone would say, oh, he won't be able to do this, he won't be able to do that, she was like, well, we'll see, you know? And so she always just like let him rise to whatever level he was going to rise to, and just expected of him as much as she could. I think part of the reason that Gannett is so much out there in the community is his own personality. He loves to walk around. He loves to look at things. He loves to be where stuff is going on. And his mother and the caregivers really take pains to let him choose what he wants to do. And it's often to go out somewhere. I remember one of the things that really struck me in the early days of shooting was there was a day that they went to the park around lunchtime, and, you know, Donald called up some people and was like, hey, we're going to be in the park for lunch, you know, if you want to come out and hang out with us. And there were like 5 or 6 people came out, and we all had lunch in the park. And the next day they asked Gannett what he wanted to do, and he pointed to Picnic Park Friends. And that became one of his standard things that, not every day, but sometimes he wanted, was Picnic Park Friends. And, you know, he would do that, and then whoever was working with him would, you know, call up some people, and usually they could get a group of people who would show up in the park, because their friends are all, like, artists without 9-to-5 jobs.
It's a great picture. I mean, it's a great thing to imagine. You know, I just found it so unusual that artists would have this job. It's an interesting juxtaposition.
Well, one thing that was interesting when we were going through the process of getting this funded, and there, you know, various panels are watching it and giving us feedback, and one person on a panel said something which hadn't occurred to me before, which is that the sort of common perception of the artist, or especially of the like sort of urban hip artist, is that they're really self-absorbed, and like the last thing you can imagine them doing is being a caregiver. And I think that's probably true for some of them, but I think there are a surprising number of artists working with communities and working with individuals in this way. And also, Gannett's a natural fit for an artist to work with because, there's the music thing. If they're musicians, and he's really into sound and really into music and creating this odd music that your average person might not really connect with, but someone who's like, you know, studied John Cage and like, you know, done experimental sound pieces is totally going to, you know, love this, what Gannett does with sound. And also the way that Gannett makes you move more slowly through the world. And Coulter, one of the caregivers, has talked about this, that that Gannett slows your pace down and makes you look at everything longer, which is kind of a thing that artists want to do anyway. I think Gannett is kind of inspiring in that way. And also the setup with the apartment kind of became like a locus for a lot of art and music activity, because the caregivers were there a lot of the time, and sometimes, you know, several of them would be there, and then they would play some music, and then one of them would be drawing while the other one was, you know, making dinner for Gannett. And so it became a space for art, and there were music shows in the backyard, and you know, parties there, and there's a lot happening around him.
It just sounds completely ideal and completely unique. It must be very unique. What were some of your favorite moments, and not what we see, but just things that kind of, sometimes when you're sitting here quietly or when you're walking down the street, you suddenly remember and you get excited by?
Let me think. They're mostly in the film. I love the sequence where Coulter is walking in Gannett's old room with him, showing him the room that now everything's gone from, because it's all been moved to his apartment. It's the room in his mom's house, and all this stuff's moved into the apartment. And they're just walking around in the room and like listening to the way it echoes. And you know, it's like, don't sit down. That's where the bed was. Don't try to sit down. And I love that I was able to keep in something that was made for TV, a pretty long take. It's a pretty long take. And that sort of, it just has a feeling that that I wanted and that is there. Another moment that I really am happy about is the moment with Amanda and Gannett sitting in the park, and she's just sort of making those sounds to him. And that was a day that in the afternoon I knew I was going over to interview Amy, and none of the sort of formal sit-down interviews really ended up in the movie. I never really expected them to. I mostly just wanted to get more information and get people talking. But in the morning, I knew Amanda was with Gannett in the park, and I was like, oh, I already have plenty of footage of Gannett in the park, and I've got some good footage of Amanda and Gannett, and I'll go over there, but I don't know, there's no point in really shooting. And because I didn't think anything important was going to happen, I felt really free to just fool around and try different ways of shooting. And I think that really, like, I realized in the process of making this documentary that when there isn't much drama going on and you're not worried about missing anything is the time when, for me, my camera work is the best. And, like, the lesson I learned from this documentary is to just relax into it. And there's a weird kind of, in the same way that painting is sort of existentialist, shooting documentary is, in that you make this mark and it's there and you can't really take it back. And that's sort of an exciting thing about documentary. And it's a lot of the shooting is just sort of relaxing into it and not having the anxiety of, like, missing something, you know? And especially in a story like Gannett's, it's so much about little moments that you just can't predict, which makes it a hard movie to shoot because, you know, except for the eye surgery, you have no idea when something significant is going to happen, you know? It's not like something like Spellbound where, like, okay, here's the competition, you know? And, you know, these are going to be important moments. Like, with Gannett, you know, the day of the move, surgery, those are important days. Between that, all those little moments between people, you just kind of got to wait for them. So,
what I thought you were going to say was that, you know, when you realize that in filming you just had to let go at certain moments, and that it was an interesting parallel to caring for Gannett, because you can't hold on to how you want a day to be or where you might want to arrive at, or right. You just have to kind of go with the flow and go with the flow of this person who has a really strong character and just let go into that, you know. And I thought that's what you were going to say. So it was interesting. I had to let go of my own suppositions of what you might say. But
it is also very true that, like, you know, there are certain things that I heard, and I can't think of any of them right now, that heard stories about people doing with Gannett that was like, oh, that's got to be in the movie, that I never, despite shooting for 3 years, never managed to get on film, you know. But other things I did, like hearing about the driving game in the laundromat, like I was like, I have to film that just because he's so crazy about the cars, and like the idea of him driving is just like the running joke among everybody, that, like, you know, imagining Gannett driving. So and that day it worked out. So did
this ideal situation of where Gannett was living, and I mean just this ideal situation, persist?
Well, yes and no. I mean, what happened was, so Coulter, his art career really took off, and he basically stopped working with Gannett after, like, he gradually tapered off and then stopped working with Gannett because he was basically making art full time and was having shows all over the place that he had to go and install. And so he's still in San Francisco in general, and, you know, very much in contact with Gannett, and, you know, picks up a shift here and there, but he's not one of the primary caregivers anymore. And then Donald, and this was the hardest thing for Gannett and for Donald, his boyfriend bought a house in Portland, and they ended up moving to Portland, and are actually making their own movie now, which is going to be fantastic. So he had to stop working with Gannett, and it was really hard for both of them. And they still, like, he calls Gannett every week and talks to him on the phone, and new caregivers who've come in will, like, often call Donald rather than calling Gannett's mom, you know, sometimes with questions. I mean, he's still got this strong connection, but he's not there anymore. And there are two new people living there who are good, but what his mom discovered when Donald and Coulter left is that the agency that was overseeing his program, because the caregivers were so good, they weren't very involved, and they weren't keeping records of his personal program. So basically, his file was kind of empty. And, I mean, besides having worked with him for a while, also Donald and Coulter had transitioned with him from high school. The first day that I met his mom was the day that there was his graduation party from high school, which I wish I had filmed, but I hadn't asked yet if I could do the film. But it was all these people who had worked with Gannett over the years talking about him and stuff. That's one of those things just like, oh. So, you know, in high school, there was this amazing infrastructure for him, and like there were, you know, there was the occupational therapist and his physical therapist and his teachers and all these people who basically trained Donald and Coulter about working very specifically with Gannett. But a lot of that information didn't get picked up by the agency. And so when Donald and Coulter left, it was hard to train the new people coming in. The other interesting element to this was that Katie Edmonds, who I hired as an intern on the film, and she had worked with autistic and other kids with developmental disabilities when she was younger, when she used to live in Santa Barbara. But now she was interested in film, and she was interning with me and eventually became my assistant editor. She was great. And so she logged all like 180 hours of footage. So she, you know, she saw many hours of people working with Gannett. And when she was done with that, she got a job working with Gannett for a while. And she was great because she really, really knew him and was really organized. And she helped organize the program and helped smooth the transition. But still, it's not quite the same. And Amy has been saying that it's kind of like she's rebuilding the situation from scratch a little bit, and that she always stresses when she's been going to conferences with us and speaking, you know, and answering questions after the film, and she always stresses that you have to make sure that the agency is keeping records and that there's continuity, and that you don't get lazy in oversight just because your caregivers are really good, because if they leave, then that there's got to be something to transmit, you know. So,
you know, I definitely believe that a movie or a project transforms the maker of it. I made several documentaries, and I know that they've changed me. They're audio documentaries. I think I really want to end on that. I mean, how do you feel like the process of making this and having created a film like this, how has that affected you? How has that changed you? How has that informed you? What's the mark that's left on you?
It's definitely changed it's changed the way that disability is visible to me. Like, I really see it much more in the world and kind of understand it in a different way. I mean, I think the big thing with Gannett is if you don't know him at all and you look at him, you see this guy who's not making eye contact, he's drooling, he can't speak, and he needs assistance with everything. And you think, well, that's what kind of life is that? Like, this guy's, you know, this guy's not having a life. And then when you really experience his life and you see, like, these heights of joy and the effect that he has on other people and the things that he's fascinated by and the crazy music that he plays on the piano, it just makes you think every time you see somebody else who, like, seems really closed down in some way, that there's something going on in there, you know? It really, it just makes you look at every person as having this full, subjective life. And you have to always remember that, like, you know, for everybody, their life is the whole thing, you know? Like, this is, they're in that body, and they're having that life, and whatever disability or abilities they're dealing with, like, they adapt. And they have experiences that are important to them and sometimes that are really important to the world, too. So,
those were the words of filmmaker Robert Arnold speaking about his film, The Key of G. The Key of G will be shown in San Francisco at the Roxy Theater for one night only, January 24th. So mark your calendars if you're here. Otherwise, please visit thekeyofg.com for more information on the film and upcoming screenings. My name is Tanya Katenjin. This is Sight Unseen. Please visit radiotanya.org to hear this or other programs. You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM, the UK's first radio art station.